Hello everyone, and welcome to a brand new series of The Stagey Place with me, your host, Elliot Shepherd. If you're new to the podcast, then welcome. We chat to creators from behind the scenes in theatre, from writers to directors, producers to stage managers, as well as the graphic designers and theatre influencers. To kick us off the first episode of Series 4 today, we have the writer and director Piers Black, to which in today's episode, we chat with him about his production of Catching Comets, which is being staged at the Pleasance in London from the 14th until the 19th of September before going on tour. So strap yourselves in and let's delve into the episode. Piers, thank you so much for coming on to The Stage Place today. It's such a pleasure to have you on.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to be here. Thanks, Elliot.
No, thank you so much. We should let listeners know before recording this that we are recording this on the Sunday before your play Catching Comets is set to play at the Pleasance in London. So how are you feeling in this current moment, the weekend before the show going on in London?
Yeah, good. Yeah, it's really exciting. It's been quite a long journey with this show now. I think like lots of people who've had to sort of delay their shows with the pandemic, it's been a really odd process where we did the show in 2019 at Edinburgh Festival and we had a tour kind of set up and ready to go. And then I think it was the week before we went to go into rehearsals when everything got shut down. So it was kind of, you know, like on the edge of the cliff, ready to jump off and then had to stop. So yeah, getting back on the horse and getting ready to do it again. And we've done a couple of shows already in Wales and we had another cancellation in Manchester, but you know, that's just all part of it at the moment. So bringing it to London, I live here now and it feels like a really nice way to kind of bring it all together. Very excited.
Yeah. Amazing. And we're going to talk a little bit about Catching Comets later into the episode today. But what I wanted to first get to know is your entry into the industry. So how did you find your love for the theatre and become a playwright?
I mean, it depends how far back you want to go. I guess like my earliest memory is probably like playing the Big Bad Wolf at primary school. And I think that was one of a few very sort of ill-advised attempts at acting. I think, yeah, I just really liked, I've always really liked live stuff, like that feeling of being in a room with people. And when the being a rock star didn't work out, I think theatre was like the next thing I could think of. I remember the sort of being in like GCSE drama class and not wanting to act, but still really wanting to be involved. And it was kind of, yeah, a teacher, he was amazing, sort of explaining to me what I was doing was actually directing. I never really distinguished between directing and writing, again, because I probably didn't know that they were different things at that point. Yeah, and I just really liked making. So I like made some probably very bad ripoff of Pinter plays, some very bad like ripoff of Tarantino scripts. And then sort of found myself at university taking a show to Edinburgh and I had to fill out a form with a section about what your theatre company was called. And I think at that point I was like, oh, maybe this is like a thing actually. And had to on the spot kind of make up a theatre company. And then a bunch of us who did that sort of really enjoyed it and stuck around and found myself properly doing it, I guess. I mean, I don't know if there's ever a moment where you like it's fully your life, like it comes with lots of other bits like teaching and keeping life afloat, but a big one for me was I won the BBC Alfred Bradley Bursary Award I think in 2015, and that was the first time I got to sort of quit the bar job and take it as seriously as possible. And yeah, I don't know, it's the first time where people would like introduce me as like a writer, and that felt very, very odd and still feels very weird to say. But yeah, that was the first time it felt sort of legitimized from somewhere else.
And how would you describe your writing and the plays that you put on? Do you feel like you have a certain like inspirations in life that like feel very similar? Or how would you describe your uniqueness of the plays that you write?
Oh, that's a tricky one. I don't know. I think, you know, some really good advice I got given by Ali McDowell, who's like one of my sort of heroes for writing and is also someone who's been like super supportive and helpful, was, you know, write the plays that you want to see. Yeah, I think I write stuff that I think I would enjoy. Yeah. And generally that's loads of stuff. Like, I think my favorite thing ever is The Simpsons. I like stuff that can kind of be funny, but also like get you invested emotionally as well. And I feel like I've had a go at sort of everything. Like this show, Catching Comets, is very much based on understanding cinema and like action movies and that sort of like satirizing that world and that genre. I've also written stuff that, yeah, it's a bit all over the place. I don't know.
Yeah, I love the fact that you just spoke about Alistair McDowell because he is one of my true heroes as well. I watched Pomona back in 2015, I think it was, when it was at the Shed at the National. I think it was called The Shed. We then did it at university, so we had to make our own theatre companies at the end of uni. I went to Coventry for uni 2017.
And I really wanted to do Pomona because it's such a fantastic script and the characters in it are just absolutely wonderful. And I went and saw Alistair in one of the previews at X at the Royal Court. And I was like, his writing is spectacular. And I talk about him all the time. And, you know, one of my big achievements has been doing Pomona at university. And I really agree with what you just said there about, like, you know, writing stuff that you want to watch, that you know, that you want to write, because, you know, there are other people out there who will want to see that, you know, and it's the passion as well through writing. So it's amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's definitely when I was younger, I think I was sort of writing plays that I thought people wanted me to write. Like, I was trying to write cool thrillers, or like, I was trying to be like, I mean, I've written loads of plays that are like bad versions of Valley McDowell plays. But it's much more satisfying, obviously, if you can find something which you, from you and from your experience. And I think cracking that was like a big part. And then, you know, it's still something I'm kind of working on, I guess, and lots of writers do as well. It's definitely a combination of, you know, drawing something out of you that's authentic, but also being very like smart about stealing from other places. That's definitely the combination. But Ali actually came to my university and did a talk, and it was the first time as well that sort of a playwright had been really sort of honest with us about it. He was very unassuming, and he said, I mean, loads of really great pieces of advice, but, you know, one of them was like, if you can think of anything else you want to do, you should probably do that. Yeah. For a room full of like hopeful playwrights was a very interesting one. But yeah, he's right. It's something that it requires quite a lot of work and lots of concentration and lots of belief and lots of stuff that you know, having to motivate yourself is it's very weird sitting in a room trying to imagine how people talk when you're completely on your own. But yeah, it obviously works for him. I think Pomona is probably one of my favorite plays, so I'm chuffed that you brought it up.
No, I absolutely agree. We did it in 2017. We took it on a little tour through Coventry. So there was like Fargo Village, which is in Coventry. Yeah. And then it was a collaboration with the Belgrade Theatre in Coventry. So there were like 12 plays done in our final year of uni. And we did Pomona. I'll read it every time and find something new about it. And just, you know, it's so amazing. And Zeppo's first monologue. Yeah, it's so cool. So cool. Yeah. And, to have the actual, you know, Pomona type island place in Manchester and just like have this whole imagination come out of it with like the underground stuff. Like, it's phenomenal. So there were 3 plays out of the 12 in our year that got to go to the Studio Theatre at Belgrade in Coventry. And Pomona was one of those. So we got to perform it, you know, to a, you know, really big, you know, like general admission audience rather than just university, you know, friends and family. And that was like a really big achievement. But yeah, Pomona is always one of my top favourite plays. It's huge.
Well, I think I saw it about 3 times when it was on it. Sort of various different places, because it was on at the Shed, then the Orange Tree, then the Royal Exchange. It's a good one. Also, I used to live in Salford Quays. I lived in Manchester for about 10 years until quite recently, and I used to have to get the tram into town every day, and I would go through Pomona, and it is this mad place where no one gets on or off. It still stops there.
I'm just gonna jump in here. Hi everyone, I'm Robin from High Top Design, and you're probably wondering who I am. Well, I'm a graphic designer with over 10 years experience in corporate communications. I've recently been working with Elliot on the new logo for the Stager Place, but why am I interrupting the interview? I just wanted to let you guys know that as well as podcast artwork, I can help with lots of other things. Design projects, CVs, photo restorations, websites, magazines, posters, programs, anything like that, just give me a shout. Honestly, no job is too big or too small, and I will work with you to make sure the end result looks awesome. Don't need anything designed? No worries at all. I know you love theatre as you're listening to this podcast, so you'll probably like my range of musical theatre prints and badges. I also have a cute range of mushroom pride pins, or I can make you and your family and friends into cartoon versions. You can find all this and much more on my website, hightop.design, or give me a like and a follow on Instagram and Facebook. I'm hightopdesign on those as well. Anyway, thanks guys. I will now let you get back to the show.
So moving on to Catching Comets then, which is your play. Before we chat about the themes and what audiences can expect, can you give us a little summary of what the play is about?
Yeah, so, okay, the elevated pitch we've been doing for it is it's a disaster movie about falling in love. But I think it is also kind of, it works as a rom-com about the end of the world as well. Basically, it's sort of two stories told at the same time. One is about a guy called Toby who sees a comet coming towards Earth, and he panics and tries to warn everyone, and no one listens to him, and eventually sort of snaps and turns into this action movie hero, playing out this movie in his own head, where he's like beating up bad guys and stopping the comet. And that is sort of told and cut within flashbacks of him just telling the audience a very simple story about meeting someone and falling in love for the first time. And the stories eventually sort of like start smashing into each other and start talking to each other in what I think is quite an exciting way. Yeah, that's it. That's the play. Really, it's about what it means to be kind of like a hero today and what bravery looks like for normal people.
Yeah, and with the blurb of this play showcasing the stakes and the immediacy with the comet hurtling towards Earth, that's already a really exciting concept because it could literally go anywhere. Where did the idea come from that you wanted to mash up the genres such as disaster movies and a romantic story intertwined within it?
I mean, I guess there's a long and a short version of this answer, but it was to do with, there's been like a big trend recently of big studios in Hollywood like remaking blockbusters because, yeah, you know, it's cheaper, or they know the audience will definitely come, and how many times can you remount and reboot and sequelize something? Like James Bond, I think, is one of those ones who's really interesting, who he's gone through so many different formats, and like the James Bond who, like, you know, doesn't cry and doesn't feel anything, doesn't really seem like the type of man that we should be idolizing today. Yeah, there's lots of reasons why he's really cool, but there's also loads of reasons why he's like super problematic. Yeah, Blade Runner's a good example of that as well. Like, I mean, the movie Blade Runner is great, the original one, but like the romance or like sex scene in it is kind of a rape scene. And then like we're bringing it back with a new one, and Harrison Ford's character is there, and we're still kind of meant to think of him as being like a hero. So part of it came from looking at those and being like, how difficult is that for the people who grew up with those movies, who maybe don't feel like they're that type of person, and how problematic is it anyway of worshipping the people, normal everyday people who don't look like you to them and to their relationships and stuff like that. Part of it is a bit like what I was saying before, is kind of thinking about vulnerability as an act of bravery.
I think it's true though, like what you say, like especially as we move through the times and we talk about like PC in like TV shows and films and stuff, how you can go back onto those James Bond movies and see him as a bit misogynistic. It's so hard to understand how, I mean, and maybe not, because, you know, times do change and times move on and we learn, but, you know, that's fascinating. And in the play, is that ever talked about, or is this just solely a one-man character show that deals with those sorts of, you know, problems at all?
I mean, the way the play sets it up is that the character sort of creates a fake disaster that he can sort of punch his way out of, rather than dealing with his very like normal everyday problems.
Yeah,
I think rather than sort of bashing the idea over the head and saying, look everyone, look at this, and having like a debate about it, I think what it tries to do is present those two ideals next to each other and kind of let the audience look at it and make the decisions for themselves, rather than being kind of given the answer, I think.
Yeah. And like you said, like just before the pandemic started, you were in rehearsals about to start a run, and obviously it got cut. Since now doing the rehearsals again and remounting the show again, have you found that any of the themes have resonated a little bit differently from the past 18 months? Obviously, because, you know, you've got a comet hurtling towards Earth, which is quite, you know, life disaster. And then we've just had a real life disaster with the pandemic and with COVID. Like, it's going to probably resonate quite a lot really soon after the pandemic, watching the show maybe for some people. Have you felt like in rehearsals, like you've had discussions or talks about how the past 18 months have been and how you could potentially bring emotions or feelings towards this new staging this year?
Yeah, absolutely. I think everyone who's making work at the moment is sort of having that conversation about, first of all, like, should we be, like, what does an audience want now? Because maybe people don't want to go to the theatre and have a reminder about how terrible everything has been. Yeah. And maybe people just want to be entertained, which I completely understand. And, you know, theatre has a duty to be entertaining as much as it has to be sort of, you know, political and sort of relevant in those ways. But we kind of talked initially, and there was a point where I was like, right, I'll just redraft the whole play and we'll embrace the fact that COVID's happening and we'll make clear references to it. And when I did that, it didn't work for exactly those reasons, where suddenly this thing kind of took over. And I think what we discussed at length and the conclusion kind of came to is that kind of anything that happens now will be a COVID play, whether that's Hamlet or like Frozen. Like, they're going to be understood within the context of that thing, just because that's where the audience is right now. Mm-hmm. So I don't think the plays have to be specific about it. So what happened was we've had to change a couple of small things, but nothing too obvious, I think. It's more sort of in terms of logistics. What's really happened and what's kind of surprised me is all the stuff about intimacy has really just brightened up, I guess. Like, the idea of being able to touch someone that you care about, and the idea of how important it is when you're stressed out or anxious to be able to be honest with the people around you about how you're feeling. Those are quite big things in the play, and I think those are quite big things for anyone who sort of lived with a partner during lockdown or not being able to see someone that they love, whether that's family or friends or relationships during this time. I think that's all really kind of come out in a new way that I hadn't anticipated. But also, like you said, there's all the stuff about the world ending, which is like so central to the play, and we couldn't have predicted. And it's all there. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's mad to think about it. I think that idea of just being anxious and feeling impending doom is very, very big in the play anyway. And actually we didn't need to do anything to that stuff. It's all there.
Well, I'm coming to watch the show on Tuesday, and I am very excited to come and watch.
Very good.
I love the promotional photos. You know, it's always like really grabbing to see like the orb, the glowing orb. Like, I'm really excited to see how it all works in the play, and I'm just very excited to see the show myself. So, Piers, what I want to ask is, obviously we've got a lot of listeners who are early career or are still figuring out what kind of career they want to take. I know that you spoke about the advice that Alistair gave you years back at your university, but have you got any advice for people who might be listening to this podcast and want to go through the pathway of being a playwright?
Yeah, I mean, I think what I said earlier kind of still stands true. Like, write stuff that you want to see. Like, be brave. Like, that really is it. Like, there's no point putting on a show which is a bit like stuff that we've already seen. Tell your story, tell it the way that you want to tell it. And I think really importantly, if you're going to do it in theatre as well, like, this is another great Ali piece of advice, but it's one that I think lots of people have given me sense, which is, if you're going to make a theatre show, think about the fact that it's in a theatre. Like, why is that different from a film or a TV show or something? Like, what are the rules that you get to play with? And how exciting is it that you can say, like, you know, one minute you're on the moon and the next minute you're in a dumpster, and all of that stuff that you don't think should be able to happen. I mean, I'm going to come back to Pomona, which is in that play. There's a stage direction which is something like, and the world falls apart around them.
Yeah,
and stuff like that, where it's like, that is going to be amazing in a theater, and you couldn't do that in a you could do it in a film, but it'd be very different. And I think it's trying to embrace the things that really sort of lean into the fact that you're live in a space with people, because that is such a special experience. Be brave.
Nice. I love that. Yes, definitely. Be brave and just go for it and write what you want to write. And, you know, people will help you along the way.
Hi, everyone. My name is Kelly Horn. I'm a freelance movement director and movement and dance teacher, and I have created my own brand, Kelly Horn Movement. Kelly Horn Movement provides movement classes and workshops. These classes explore something new and different each week and focus on different ranges of movement, from mindful movement to body conditioning, even to contemporary dance. I wanted to create these classes to pass on and share my joy and passion of movement, and offer something that not only boosts creativity, imagination, exploring different ways of moving and allowing people to connect to their bodies, but also promotes physical and mental well-being for performers, creatives, and even people outside of the arts. If you would like to join my weekly classes, or even just receive updates about future classes and workshops, head to my website, kellyhornmovement.com. You can also follow me on Instagram. My handle is @kellyhornmovement, and I'm also on Twitter, @kellyhornmove. Thank you so much to The Stagey Place for all of the support, and enjoy the rest of the episode, everyone. Bye.
So, Piers, what I usually do with all of my guests on this podcast, and it's one of the final questions of the show, is ask you where exactly your stagey place is. So this could be somewhere that you've seen your favourite piece of theatre. It could be the theatre that you grew up with. You may have worked in the theatre before. Or it could be a place that inspired your love for performing or for writing. So, Piers, whereabouts is your stagey place?
I think that, yeah, weirdly, this is a really easy question for me to answer, which is it's the main space at the Royal Exchange in Manchester.
Amazing.
And that is because, number one, so it's a huge hall in Manchester that used to be, yeah, the Exchange Hall, and they built at some point this crazy little dome in it, which is, yeah, it looks like it's a space station, basically. So it's really at odds with its surrounding, this kind of grandeur. And it's a, in the round, I think it's about 720 seater, and you are always so close to the audience when you're in that space, because you're in the round. I think, like I said, I lived in Manchester for about 10 years, and during that time was when I was basically learning how to be a director and a writer. And yeah. I think understanding that the audience are the most important thing about the experience was a really important thing for me to get, and is now something that our company is always really aware of, and the work I make is always, you know, it needs audience. And I think having that experience of seeing the audience faces in every one of those shows and just really acknowledging how important they are is really good. And the, some of the stuff they've done in there, some of the set design is amazing, because you really just have to think outside of the box, because if you're in that kind of space. And I've seen some incredible shows there. The last thing I did before leaving was I was the associate director on Sarah Franklin's last show there, which was Light Falls by Simon Stevens. And it was a really sort of lovely thing to end on, because I wanted to work with Sarah for ages. I wanted to work in that space for ages. And I'd seen so many shows there. And it was, yeah, it was lovely. It's also, I mean, I think one of my favorite things in the world is to go to theaters when there's nothing in them. Like theatres, yes, or churches, or like football stadiums, anything where there should be people when there aren't people there. That, yeah, that like tingly feeling you get in those spaces is like my favourite thing. And the Royal Exchange is definitely one of those places. And when we were rehearsing for Catching Comets recently, we were in one of their sort of studio spaces, and every morning I'd sneak in early and just go sit in the main space. Yeah. And that's, I think that is the perfect version of the stagey place for me. Yes.
Amazing. Perfect. Thanks so much, Piers. That rounds off the end of our podcast. So I want to thank you so much for coming on today. It's been a real joy. I love the fact that we've talked about Alistair McDowell. I think that's amazing. But also our listeners have got a little insight into what Catching Comets is like, and to how the pandemic and rehearsals been to restage, remount and redesign and rethink about what theatre is like in a post-COVID time. So Piers, thank you so much for joining me today.
No problem. Thanks, Elliot. It's been a pleasure.
And there we go. That was our episode today with writer and director Piers Black. I'd love to thank Piers once again for coming onto the Stage Place today to chat about his play Catching Comets, which you can catch at the Pleasant Theatre in London from the 14th until the 19th of September 2021. My name's been Elliot Shepherd. You've been listening to The Stagey Place, and you can catch us on social media on Instagram and Twitter at The Stagey Place. And until next time, I hope you're keeping safe, and I look forward to hear from you soon.